Welcome to Playful Beginnings, a podcast about the magic of play therapy for therapists, students, and anyone interested. In our podcast, we'll explore the deeper understanding of play therapy and the skills we use in working with children.
We hope to help you understand the why behind what we do and how it helps kids heal and grow. I'm Dr. Christy Opiola, a working play therapist and university professor in North Carolina.
I'm Dr. Maggie Parker, a play therapist and professor in DC.
Hi, Christy.
Maggie.
How are you?
Well, I know. I was just going to say, Maggie and I are just in a weird headspace. So I want to acknowledge that as we start our podcast today. There's some big changes kind of happening at our jobs, our universities that we're trying to deal with. So I do want to start there because I think we're going to come off a little different today. And in a spirit of authenticity and transparency, I do want to say that because I think we both feel pretty heavy with other things that are impacting us up right now, which I think, you know, as a person who practices too, right, that has an impact on me.
We're human too. Certain things can happen in our lives and like take us out. And how do we like address that? And sometimes, you know, like as we discussed, sometimes it's just saying like, hey, I'm in a weird headspace right now. And so we're acknowledging that to y'all.
Yeah, we have big feelings right now that we're trying to figure out. We're trying to make sense of and, you know, stay regulated and stay focused. And so we just want to start there with our listeners, because I think it's an important component as practicing clinicians that we acknowledge kind of those moments when you feel stuck in play therapy or you feel like a broken record. Maybe you just feel like you're saying the same thing over and over and over again, or feel like you're missing something, but you don't know what else to say. And so I know Maggie and I have experienced that currently in the past. I know I felt a lot of it when I was first starting as a play therapist. And I felt like my responses and understanding was like still in a place of development.
Mm-hmm.
And so I leaned heavily on those core foundational skills that we use in play therapy and would go back to those when I didn't know what else to do. So
yeah,
I don't know what about you, Maggie.
Well, I think it's like, I feel it. I think it's kind of dual process too, right? Is that I'll feel it sometimes in the playroom where I feel like I'm saying the same thing over and over again, especially with when a child is playing out similar experiences each week. And I'm like, am I even really doing anything helpful? And then also I think with teaching and supervision, I feel like I say the same things a lot. And I think that's also, if I'm being really transparent, a fear about this podcast. Like, do we have enough stuff to talk about to have 8 million episodes? And I think we do, you know, and it's hard to like, also as a supervisor and a teacher, you know, it's like, those are pretty finite amounts of time that you have. And like, even in the play space, but I do sometimes feel like I'm saying the same thing. So like, how do you get out, like, because I think there's like a fear, like, oh, I'm just not doing it right. At least I sometimes have that feeling still.
Yeah.
Usually that's when I call you and we talk about it. And I think if it was my supervisees, I'd say, like, if that's what's happening in the room and that's what you're feeling in the room, and we can watch videos and kind of talk through how we're conceptualizing to make sure that we're not missing something.
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say, like, to me, it's twofold, right? Like, what is the kid doing in the play space? I think sometimes we lose track of that, and we want, like, novelty is really important in our society, like coming up with these like really impactful statements. And kids can be really repetitive in their therapy space, right? They're working on things in the ways that best suit them. And so I think back to when I was in training and I had a kiddo that I worked with for the first 6 months of our relationship together. This kid played in the sand. Not only did he play in the sand, he did exactly the same thing the whole session for 6 months every week, right? And I joke and I'm like, it sounded something like, shh, 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 shh. And he would take a scoop and he'd go, shh. And then he would smooth it back out, right? And take another scoop. But we would spend 45 minutes playing in the sand. Every once in a while, this client would build something like a castle or try to build something. And then when it didn't work, he would smooth it out and just go back to sifting, right? Which I think in the moment, how many ways can you say you're smoothing that out? You took a big scoop. You poured that right there, right? Like that is what a lot of my responses sounded like. And internally, if I'm going to be like totally honest with you guys, I was like, stay awake, stay awake, stay awake. Because also, that sound is very soothing.
Yes, it is.
People.
You're like,
I know.
it is, it's so hard.
And it was so repetitive, right? There wasn't much change. And for this client, that tended to be a trend. So if it wasn't that, he would then go to another task and like play it out over and over and over again, not for 6 months, but maybe for like a month to 2 months, right? Like that was really his therapeutic space was about mastery. It was about feeling competent. The materials that he utilized were like almost self-soothing in a way. And I think he really utilized the space as an avenue like to resettle himself from, you know, like what was happening in his world, but he wasn't bringing his world into the play session in a way that we would traditionally look at it as, oh, here's content for me to move off of, right? Like I didn't have those connections. And so I felt like a broken record, a lot of sessions of repeating and repeating and repeating and, you know, having a loop of responses that I went through. And, you know, even in supervision and that questioning, like, how am I being therapeutic right now? What about what I'm doing is therapeutic? And this kid was changing outside of this. So, although I didn't see it in session, right? Like it was getting reported outside of session that there were these subtle shifts for this client outside of the session. And so sometimes I don't always understand exactly what's happening in the playroom.
And you just try and be present and
And that, you know, trusted and hateful phrase of child-centered play therapists, trust the process of any clinician or any, you know, academic in the world who says process, right? Like in those moments, it's really hard to trust because I also want to say my own self-doubt, you know, like impact it, how trusting myself that this is what was going on.
Well, and I think, like, you know, so it, that's related to so many things and the pressures that we feel, right? Like, so we came into this space because we wanted to help kids. And so then when you're in it and you're like, am I helping anyone? Because we're also taught, I think, inherently within our society, that helping someone is telling them what to do or correcting something or like embarking some sort of knowledge. And then, especially like for those of us that are coming from different spaces, like whether it be teaching or the school system, or even just the fact that you're like, you're paying me a lot of money to help your child. And it can feel like, and you
They're
know,
expected
we,
to justify, right? Like, because
right.
changes, I'm still trying to understand the purpose of this behavior that, you know, is coming in the playroom frequently.
And sometimes we don't know. Like, I have, you know, I can make guesses and conceptualize what's happening with the play. I had a child with really significant abuse and never disclosed it. I never asked about it. And in the sessions, they would just paint huge hearts like over and over and over again and like just layer upon layer of paint. So really sensory. And I'm like, you know, I'm also in a space where, you know, I've talked about this before. They've talked about how child center doesn't work and play therapy is stupid and all of this stuff. And I'm like battling between, I'm a doctor now because I had just graduated, and oh no, this isn't real. And believing them, because it's hard not to let that doubt come in when you're being told by everyone else. I just kept going with it. And I did see them get better. And the light, you know, so that this is a child that was forced to grow up very early and then was super pumped because my father-in-law was Santa Claus and came in as Santa Claus. And then, you know, they yelled at me because I didn't send all three letters to Santa and the heat, you know, Santa had only gotten two. So I took that as a good sign, like that childhood was coming back, that excitement was coming back, that joy, I guess. But it did feel repetitive, and I was saying the same things, like, oh, you got another color, and now you're doing it again, and around, and you know how you want to do that.
Yeah, and I think this is where the layer is, right? Like when we don't trust ourselves or we don't feel like we understand what's happening, sometimes we can feel repetitive, right? And we can feel repetitive because the child in your session is being repetitive. Just like adults in our session share the same content over and over and over in the same story, or they slightly adjust the story. And so sometimes what I'm looking for in repetitive play is there any subtle change or shift in the play? And although my responses might not shift, right? Like that's helpful for me to, when I'm thinking about what I'm doing in the session, that, oh, something is shifting here, right? So that I stay within the process and I don't move into trying to help this kid move faster or shift what they're doing because it's not meeting my need. And so that's something that I'm thoughtful about in session when I'm finding myself being repetitive, repeating the same thing, is really kind of reflecting what's happening here for the kid. Is this a me issue, or is this something my client is trying to share with me that they're needing space to process this through?
And I think it's really important to be able to own those small things, like you were saying. Like, I kind of was, it was hard to stay awake. I think a lot of times students and supervisees are scared to say those things because they may be told by their supervisor, like, okay, like let's. And it's also really important to say them. And so I remember coming to you one time because I had a client who didn't talk the whole time. And it was very hard for me to stay present because my mind is like moving a million miles a minute. And you were like, let's think about this for a second. How safe does this child have to feel in order to kind of like buck the societal expectations that they maintain conversation? And that really shifted the way in which I was able. And I don't know necessarily if my responses to this child changed, but my understanding shifted and helped
Well,
me.
yeah, I was gonna say, my guess is your level of acceptance of the child not talking shifted, right?
Increase.
Like your way of being in the room with this child. That sometimes we feel conversation is how we justify what we do, or kids conversing with us. And we forget, like, if we go back to the very core of what Axline, Landreth, right, say about kids is, toys are their words and play is their language, right? So if we really believe in that in session, then not talking should not make a matter because they are communicating with us through play. Yet I think societally we have like this expectation that they're going to talk to us, they're going to verbalize what's happening, which takes a lot of cognitive ability to kind of understand, to know what you want to share. I don't, and that is really vulnerable for some. It's easier to play it out than to put it to words. But yeah.
And I think it's important, like, because it does require so much vulnerability in the counseling room for a client to be themselves, that I hope that we then as play therapists can be vulnerable in spaces so that we can share those pieces with someone so that we can get, like, just become better play therapists, because it also requires vulnerability on our part. And so this whole idea that, like, somehow you can just like get a script and be told, this is what you do, and this is how you do it, and you should be confident in this at all times, I think really takes away from the crux of what it is that we're doing. And it's important to be able to be like, hey, I could use some help here. And that doesn't make you a bad play therapist. I think it makes you a good play therapist.
And a strong, right? Like your own self-awareness. This is how this is impacting me. And my fear is this could be impacting my relationship with the client. It's an important thing to talk about in supervision. Or I have this desire to move this client on, right? Like I am tired of this kid sifting sand week after week after week and not really understanding. I do just have to share something sweet. This client also play behaviors that showed up. One of these repetitive play behaviors is we had a electric drill, and he would drill into a log and make, and so then there would be sawdust everywhere from like drilling into the log, and then he would get the vacuum cleaner and vacuum up all of the mess that he made, and then he would go back and drill some more, right? So like, okay, so we know like he's got awareness that, and like socially he's looking at ways like that make this acceptable. And then one day he like put the vacuum on his hand, so it like sucked up his, like it stuck to his hand, and then he was like kind of looking around, and then he like put it in his hair, so then his hair like getting in the thing. And then he came over, he got some sawdust on my shoe, so he was like doing my shoe, and then I had a skirt on, and so then he got the, it was just a fun moment of him like really exploring the use of the vacuum cleaner. So then he got like, I had a maxi skirt or a maxi dress on, and then he like sucked in the skirt into the thing to see like what would happen, so and then he like pulls it out surprise quickly, and then he tries it again. Like, to me this is very mastery play, and then it ended with him going up and doing that with my hair, so like putting my hair in and watching, like, because I had long hair, he had short hair, so he was just wondering like,
What's
it
that
was,
gonna look
well,
like?
I wasn't worried that, I mean, it was a industrial vacuum cleaner, so it's got the long hose, nothing's gonna happen to me, I was totally cool with it. But it was really cute that like over time, like he was exploring all these ways that these tools that he sees and no one lets him touch, right? Like he gets to kind of play with them in the playroom. Like I giggle when I think of that moment. And we talk about like sand, it's that same type of thing. Like when he figured out how to build something with sand, right? And then it got real wonky and he was like, whoa, what am I gonna do? This is not like, like this is like the Leaning Tower, it's gonna fall. And he's like, try it. It was just these sweet moments that if we get so stuck on they're just playing with sand. And I have to say this, and I may have said this in the past. I hate the word just in our language, right? Like it really minimizes. So even in saying that, but sometimes we minimize what kids are doing in the play session. So be mindful of that.
I mean, it really does. I think this is also probably my struggle. And I think one of the benefits that we had being surrounded by other people who would allow us this space is that it takes a lot of trust. And so if you're in a organization or an institution that doesn't have that same belief, then it's easier to kind of move away from it and think about something else. And I think that's because again, it comes back to you have to trust yourself, you have to trust the relationship, you have to trust the child, and you have to trust the process. And so if you don't have other people around that trust that also, it's easy to just go back to just, again, to go back to what feels comfortable. And I think it feels comfortable because that's what we're used to. And that's the way, I mean, if you think just even about the way we view kids in the education system and the expectations that we have for them, this idea that play is frivolous and it's not as beneficial, but we know that it is. And so I think that's really one of the hardest things is if you have people around that don't trust that process, and how do you seek out support in that way?
Well, and if your supervisor is, I don't want to say that they're not doing this, right? But they're not giving you time to explore maybe what's happening, and we go to action oriented instead of like, how's this kid being in the playroom? How are you being in the playroom? Right? Like kind of a shift of, I have to do something to, how am I, like, am I accepting? Am I okay? So I shared that story in the sand, and not my proudest play therapy moment, but I will say I fell asleep one session. Right?
No.
Not for long. Oh, I did.
That
I
is
did.
amazing. The bravery. Look at your courage right now and sharing.
But it's true, right? Like, not my finest moment, and a reality of lots of things, right? What a great conversation my supervisor and I had about what am I doing to take care of myself? How do I prep for these sessions, right? And what message do I send to my client falling asleep in session, right? That his play is not valuable, that what he, I'm not seeing the value in what he's doing, right? And what do I need to do to be able to do that? Like, where am I finding worth in his ways of being in the play space? Were really important for me to explore as a clinician. And yeah, not my proudest moment. We all have things that we've done in the playroom that we don't share with people. We're human, we're fallible, right? Like,
Chrissy, it happened to me too.
Okay, good.
I was so tired and I couldn't figure it out. I was in graduate school. I was like, I can do it. And I just remember like slapping myself on the face, like, wake up, before I went into session. I think also that was one of the gifts that Dr. Landreth gave us. I don't know if you remember this, but he was like, listen, if you're tired, take a nap,
Oh, yeah.
crawl under your desk, go to sleep. And I worked in the clinic and we had a little tiny closet as our office. And I would just climb, like crawl under my desk. I still do it to this day.
She
I,
does.
oh yeah, I sleep on the office, my office floor at the university. I have a bean bag in one of, I have like four offices. I take naps on the couch, even if it's just 10 minutes, because I have like, because what I don't want to happen is the child to mistake that I don't find them to be important when in reality, I just have terrible sleep, tired all the time.
Yeah. And, I think it also sets up the expectation sometimes that we have for ourselves that kids are going to be doing fun, novel things all the time. Right. And that is not always true. It is sometimes true. And some of our kids do do that. But a lot of our kids, are using the space to work through things. And the idea that they have to work through it once or twice and be over it, I think, is a lot of pressure on kids. And what I love is giving them the space that, like, however many times you need to do this, like, I'm going to partner with you and be by your side and really try to understand it for you and, like, hear what's going on for you and share my understanding with you is such a valuable gift that we can
Yes.
offer clients.
And I really haven't had clients say, like, you just keep repeating yourself, unless it's because they're trying actively to stay out of the relationship. It's not, I haven't had that in a space where it's like, they are working and I'm reflecting their work. Even though I may feel like I'm repeating myself, I have not had them be like, stop. You just keep saying the same thing over and over again. Because we're varying it up too, right? Like we're not saying exactly the same thing, but the meaning may feel the same. And but I have not had someone
Yeah.
tell me
And
that.
sometimes what I'll do just to, like, change it up a little bit, and I don't know, however you were, like, trained. I know how Maggie and I were trained. We were taught, like, every 15 to 20 seconds we should be making a response. As a kid slows down and they're doing a lot of repetitive play, I start there. But if it ha is happening week after week, I might slow my responses down. Now, I'm not quiet for minute after minute after minute, but maybe I'm making a reflection every 30 to 40 seconds, right? So some minutes I have a single and some I have two responses, but I don't disappear. Like, I'm still very engaged, but I am pacing myself off of the clients in those moments. And I think that's an important thing to be thoughtful of.
Right.
Don't want to disappear.
No.
And then clients are looking or, like, checking with you or feeling like they have to engage with you to know you're still
Still
following
present.
them. And you are rotating your responses, your
And
the intensity, how you say it, the pacing that you're saying it at, right? Like,
when your
just
body language, like I think that's one of the gifts that Dr. Bratton gave me was sometimes you're expressing emotion by your body language. Sometimes you're reflecting feeling by like, And there's that great video of Dr. Landreth with the little girl that's on YouTube, and he uses like those non like those sounds really like, so it's like those are also demonstrating that you are there and you're present. So you don't have to just sound like a robot. I think that's where the problem lies. You're like, you're playing in the sand. You move the sand. You're now the sand goes through your fingers, right? You have to really demonstrate that you are present. And there's a lot of ways to vary it up.
yeah. And I would say the only time a kid has said something to me is when I'm parroting them. Like,
Oh, yeah.
stop copying me. That's I hear that more than anything else from a kiddo. So if you're figuring out how to say it in different ways, and sometimes that's what I spend supervision on. Okay, how many ways can we respond to sifting sand? Like, let's talk about this. What are all the different things that you can say? And I will get on the floor and pull out a little thing of sand and sift sand and sit there with the supervisee, like, what can we say? What can we do? Let's think about this, right? And, like, let's get in the headspace to figure out what is your rotation of responses that you could give, right? Like, and what are you looking at? Are you watching the facial? Because like, as this kid is like intently, like slowly pouring, I'm not just saying you're pouring at that there, right? It's like,
Right, you're so
ooh,
focused.
you are really focused. You're wanting to make sure this stays where you want, right? And I'm being very intentional in my responses with this child in the therapy space.
I think for people who are listening that are like kind of starting out, the more you can practice, I have my students watch a lot of like Dr. Lander's videos and I'll mute it or just like random kids playing. And then I'll like mute it and be like, okay, so let's think of all these reflections. Cause the more you think about them outside of the session, the easier it's going to be when you're in the session. And I don't feel like that's prescriptive. We're not telling you what to say, but it's giving you options to help you. And then the more you practice it, the easier it becomes. And I used to practice on my family members, and some liked it and some didn't.
And I love the suggestion of going back and watching your sessions on silent and like try to respond, right? And even putting like a metronome where you can set it where when it says the tick, you have to give a response. When it says a tick, you have to give a response.
That's a great idea.
Helping my pacing of the session and how I'm responding. And remember, these are just to help you like have things to quick response. If you're not role playing, right? Like, I just want to say how incredibly helpful role playing is because you can sit and have a conversation, but if you're not doing things and reenacting situations where then you can think about different responses,
It's me really hard.
hindering yourself sometimes. I think role play can be a really helpful tool. And that's why, you know, Maggie says she's practices with her family or da-da-da. I practice on my dog. My dog is very good child-centered client and is very opinionated. And can like really like share back and like be quippy and you know like ornery and all sorts of things, but it helps me like practice the skills. She's also a great therapy dog in the sense that I can give her limits and she follows limits. I can give her choices, she follows limits because we've used them so much in our household, right? Like that to her it's just like normal language, but it has helped me immensely be able to respond in moments when things are difficult, when they're doing the same thing, right? And not going to control or something else that we saw.
Thank you,
All
Christy.
right. Yes, we do have some fun guests coming. Dr. Sue Bratton is coming soon to our podcast, so be on the lookout. We're excited for her to share about her life's work in CPRT, as well as if you've ever been in relationship with Dr. Bratton, you know how nurturing and supportive she is as a human being. And so we can't wait to tap into, you know, how she cultivates that, how she maintains that. I know it's impacted Maggie and I a lot in our profession and in our relationship with Sue. So we're excited to have her. And we will see you next week.
Thank you, and we'll talk to you later. Bye, Christy.
Maggie.